The dead tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. Sheol is naked before God, and Abaddon has no covering. He stretches out the north over the void and hangs the earth on nothing. He binds up the waters in his thick clouds, and the cloud is not split open under them. He covers the face of the full moon and spreads over it his cloud. He has inscribed a circle on the face of the waters at the boundary between light and darkness. The pillars of heaven tremble and are astounded at his rebuke. By his power he stilled the sea. By his understanding he shattered Rahab. By his wind the heavens were made fair. His hand pierced the fleeing serpent. Behold, these are but the outskirts of his ways. And how small a whisper do we hear of him. But the thunder of his power, who can understand? That was a reading from Job 26, and you are listening to episode 5 of Theophilus Theologue, a theology podcast, and I am Daniel Otto Jack Peterson. And this episode, we are beginning to try to discuss a theology of darkness. And I think this comes out of our past few podcasts where we began to talk about a theology of beauty. And coming out of that, wanting to understand that beauty is not necessarily this safe, tame, pretty quality, but can be wild, can be ferocious, can be not exactly fitting all the categories and bursting out of those and these sorts of things. That's what we talked about in the last episode on a theology of wildness. And leading from that wildness into further explorations of perhaps the dimensions of what beauty can be like, because maybe we can embrace that beauty can have a wildness to it, but would we be able to say that beauty can have a darkness to it? Can there be a dark sort of beauty? And that's what we're looking at this time. Interestingly, this is the first podcast I haven't done rather late at night, which would have been the perfect setting for this. I'm actually doing this in the middle of the afternoon as my wee daughter takes a nap, because I am looking after her today, and this is a quiet moment where I can do this. And the sun is shining through the window as I record this, and there are raindrops on the window because this is Glasgow, where it almost always rains. But it has just finished, and the sky was overcast, but now I can see blue, and not full blue. There are many clouds in the sky, and there are golden rays of sunshine flowing through the window here into my eyes as I talk about a theology of darkness. So that's amusing, but perfect, really, because part of what we'll see is it's about light and darkness and their relationship to one another, and how interesting that might look and might surprise us in some ways. I've begun with this quote from Job where it talks about that boundary between light and darkness, and perhaps that's something of what we're considering here. But as we think about this, a theology of darkness, what would we think? Well, I think initially the very first thing you're going to think is that what this means then is we're going to talk about a theology of sinfulness and evil as it's represented by the metaphor of darkness in the scriptures, because maybe that's the most familiar way you'll have heard the word darkness and the thoughts about darkness and night used in scripture. And certainly it is very much used that way as a very common theme, a very continual theme, a rich one, and it's very important. And you know, one of the most famous thoughts about that that comes directly to mind is 1 John 1:5, where John says that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. Okay, so what other, you know, based on that, you might think, what other, you know, idea of darkness and what other theology of darkness could we have, but that it is everything God is not, because God doesn't even have an ounce of it in him.
Well, it's important when looking at the language of the Bible to see the various contexts in which it's used, and realizing that it's rich, it is complex, it's nuanced, and even in a literary and philosophical sense, I would say that it's playful. It's ludic, as a term we talked about last time, to do with a sense of play. And so it might have more than one meaning. I mean, we noticed this last time in the Theology of Wildness that, you know, the metaphor of a lion, a ferocious lion, is used both of Satan in the New Testament and of Jesus in the New Testament. So, you know, there's room for play there. There's room for different contexts saying different things with the same language. Okay, so I would start there by just saying be prepared for that. Maybe, you know, that's the way we see, we're used to darkness talking about sinfulness and evil, but maybe there are other ways to understand it. So, for example, just going right to the beginning of the Bible, as I think we've often done in looking at any of this theology, and it's a great place to start. Genesis sets up certain creational themes, and then, you know, the thing about Genesis is it sets up certain creational themes, and then what you find is those same creational themes are woven throughout the rest of the scriptures. It's not all just like it's there in Genesis, it's a foundation, and then you stop and don't hear about it anymore. It's rather that they get picked up again and again in all the different sorts of writing, the Psalms and the Proverbs and the prophetic writings and the wisdom sayings and all throughout the New Testament. So you see that in this case as well, when we're looking at the creation account. And again, it just comes right at the beginning, a relevance to our subject at hand. So famously, of course, we know the very first verse says that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And in the very next verse it says the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. What? There it is again. I mean, just no sooner do we get started than darkness. We are confronted with darkness. And there's a darkness here in the creation and in the creation account and in the sort of embryonic moment of creation, if you will. We have a darkness that's over the face of the deep. And what is that darkness? What could it be? And this darkness stays with us as the creation account goes on, because, of course, in the next verse, God says, "Let there be light," and there was light, and God saw that the light was good. But then what does he do here? God separated the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening and there was morning, the first day. And so from the beginning, God actually creates night. It's part of his creation, this separation of light and dark in order to mark a day, is in the creation account. And we only really have two options for how to understand what this darkness is here. Either it's created, a created darkness, in which case it is under the approbation given at the end of this account, where God looks on all that he had made and declares it very good. So it's either created, very good darkness, or there's only one other option. It's uncreated. And the only thing that's uncreated is God. And therefore, this darkness would have to be an attribute, an element of God, a characteristic of God somehow. So take your pick. Either way, it doesn't seem to me we're dealing with something evil or sinful, because the fall has not yet happened and the creation has not yet begun to suffer in pains of childbirth, as Romans 8 says, due to the fall of mankind, due to the introduction of sin into the creation, cracking it and breaking it through the choices of human beings to rebel against God. And so before darkness is taken as a metaphor for what is all against God, It actually starts as part of his creation. And what you can see here in this unfallen, very good darkness and night is that they are separated, are the words, and they're ruled, because there's, you know, the sun and the moon are given to rule over, as it says in verse 18, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. This light and darkness being separated out and ruled, being basically having its place in the scheme of things, right? Darkness has its place, its proper place in the balance of what God creates. And it's in its proper place. It's not threatening to take over and be improper, which is where, you know, I think the imagery starts to go later in the Bible and in the New Testament. And that's where, you know, darkness is used for something, to describe something against God. But here at first, it has its place, and it's ruled over, and it's ordered. It's neither, darkness is neither a confuser or a conqueror at this point. It has its place. Whereas in Job is a great book to look at for darkness. The theme of darkness is used again and again and again in it, and it's all, you know, it's the vast majority of it is definitely about the darkness of being fallen and finite in a world full of suffering and evil and sin. So that's probably the way we normally think about it. And so one of the things that Job says in chapter 10, verse 22, is he's talking about the sort of land of death, that it's a land of darkness, as he says, without any order, or it's a place of disorder. And so that's the exact opposite of what we're seeing in the Genesis account. That's a broken creation, and therefore darkness oftentimes in that creation is actually not in its proper order, and part of God's order, as we see in Genesis 1, it's become disordered, and it represents something very different, something bad. But even in Job, there is quietly, I think, a memory of this very good darkness of creation, and that's why I opened with Job 26, where it talks about the God making a circle on the face of the waters at the boundary between light and darkness. And you see some of these things again in Job 38, talking about, you know, as God is questioning Job after all his questioning of God and saying, where were you when I created the stars and everything else, you know? And one of the things he asks him is, you know, do you know where darkness goes? Do you know how to take it to its home? You know, so God knows the home and the place of darkness and how it fits into the scheme and order of things. And it's our rebellion against God that begins to make darkness seem to be something, be an enemy of God, because it's not no longer in its proper place. And so that, I think, is where we can begin to think about a theology of darkness in a slightly different way than we're used to. And don't get me wrong, I'm fully embracing what the Bible says about darkness representing evil and sin. And I fully confess, 1 John 1:5, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. And all the rest of the things that the Bible says about sinful, evil darkness. For example, in Proverbs, the ways of darkness are set as being opposed to the paths of righteousness. And that's consistently right throughout Proverbs. And, you know, Isaiah 5:20 says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And that would probably be the worry that some of you might have, that I'm trying to do here, trying to mix up darkness and light. And no, I'm not. That's a woeful thing. I agree with Isaiah the prophet about that. And of course, you know, in the New Testament, you've got Jesus in John's Gospel, chapter 9, talking about how night is coming when no one can work. And night there in John's language is representing darkness in the sense of evil and the work of Satan and so forth. And that's carried picked up and carried by Paul in Romans 13 when he says, "The night is nearly over, the day is almost here, so let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light." Or in 1 Thessalonians 5, he says of Christians, we are not of night nor of darkness. Okay? And I fully agree with that whole theme. But what I would say is that I think that night and darkness are being used in very specific senses there, okay? And that they're not the only senses in which the Bible uses the terms night and darkness. And you can see that, as I've been showing from the creation account and how that's woven through the rest of the scriptures. So, for example, in the Psalms, one of the main places you see Genesis creation language coming up again, in Psalm 104, verse 20, the psalmist says, praying to God, he says, "You make darkness, and it is night, when all the beasts of the forest creep about." So when he says "you make" there, the idea behind the Hebrew there, I believe, is that you appoint, or you bring, or you set in place darkness. So it's appointed. God appoints darkness. He has a place and a purpose for it. He appoints darkness, and it is night when all the beasts of the forest creep about, or some translation, all the beasts of the forest prowl. I really believe that this is telling us that there is a sort of God-given creepiness to creation. It has a time and a place. Nocturnal animals, you know, and you can see how this it connects to the theology of wildness in the last chapter. That's actually how God intends it to be. There's a time and a place for that. There's a balance. There is light and there is darkness, and they complement one another ultimately in God's good creation as it was intended to be from Genesis, and I would say as it will be restored to in what the Bible calls the new creation, when the entire cosmos shares in the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the glory, glorified bodies, human bodies, as well as a glorified universe, that balance of light and darkness will continue. Another psalm, famous psalm, Psalm 19, where it's talking about how the creation's day, every single day, the creation is speaking of God's glory, and it's glorifying God. That's what the first couple of verses are saying in there. And it says that day after day, its speech is heard, and night after night, it reveals knowledge. And the language there is, night reveals knowledge. Night reveals knowledge specifically of the glory of God. So even in the night, under God, when it's in its right place, the darkness and the night can actually be a realm of God's glory. Glory being this word kavod in the Hebrew for brightness. So that brightness can be revealed in the night. But it also has a sense of a weightiness, a heaviness, which I think goes well with the idea of darkness. So in creation, night and darkness, I think the Bible would say, can be places of God's glory. Now, there's much more to say. I want to talk about God and darkness himself, you know, whether God is, and darkness in redemption, and how all this might affect our artistry. Now, what I tried to do in the last episode was cut off the talk by about 10 minutes. So it was more like a 20-minute podcast rather than a 30-minute podcast. And somehow I managed to add 10 minutes so that it was a 40-minute podcast. So this time what I'm going to do is, as it's approaching 20 minutes right now, I'm just going to cut myself off in the middle of what we're talking about. And this theme will be to be continued. We will continue to talk about a theology of darkness and what might be implied there. But I think this is a good place to start. I think we've established something, that the darkness can be used in the Bible to mean things other than sin and evil, though that is maybe the main metaphor. There's a place for a good creational darkness. And what we'll see as we look at some psalms next time is that God himself is actually said to dwell in thick darkness and to cloak himself with darkness and to ride on thick darkness and so forth and so on. And so that's very interesting. Why would God use darkness? And I think what we can already go ahead and say is that he's certainly not using it. He is not wrapping himself up in darkness as evil or sin. That can't be what it means. That's not what it's talking about. He is holy, and he would, you know, wrap himself in some kind of holy darkness. Okay, and so we'll look at that next time, but I think this sets us up to really contemplate how darkness and all that, you know, we often think about with darkness might find a place in our theology, in our thinking, in our living, in our artistry, and what we do, that on the one hand helps us call evil evil, and says that is of darkness, and we are of light because God is light, and in him is no darkness at all, and that's a theology of darkness, and that's important, that we just name darkness for what it is. Although, how that would begin to affect artistry and living and politics and whatever is that we don't shy away from darkness. We don't deny it. We don't pretend it's not there and just spend all the time in the light. We can actually be there in the darkness and talk about it, name it, and so forth in terms of it being evil. But furthermore, it has implications for realizing that not all that is dark is necessarily evil. That who we are, what we say, how we create, and so forth as Christians can actually embrace certain amounts of, you know, like creepiness, like we saw with the animals and the nocturnal animals, you know, in the woods and so forth, a certain kind of darkness to things. There's a time and a place to not necessarily be able to see as well. Not everything has to be crystal clear and bright. And not all colors have to be bright. There can be darker hues to things when we create, and I mean create in the broadest sense, with our families and with things we make visually and things we make musically and in words and whatever. So that is where we're at so far, and we'll see where we can take it next time. And of course, if you have questions and challenges for me, please do make those known to me on the Facebook page, Theophilus Theologue, or on this podcast page or elsewhere. So thanks very much for listening.